This is a podcast from Minute Media.
After Dark, a podcast about the CW's Riverdale that's wrapping up a crazy amount of stuff. I'm Alex.
In the dance of death, you have to be careful who your partner is. When I dance, for instance, everyone's like, whoa, I'd rather be dead than be out there with that guy. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about Season 5, Episode 17, Woo-hoo! Chapter 93.
Yikes.
Dance of Death. Now, I'll mention before we get into it, this is written by Devin Turner. It's directed by none other than Natalie Bolt, who plays Penelope Blossom. And fingers crossed, she directed at least part of it from inside some walls somewhere, you know, just watching the monitors. Yeah. Gotta believe that happened. Gotta believe that was going on. But she killed it. They both killed it. They did an amazing job with this episode.
Steven Spielberg directed all of E.T. from inside of a wall.
Oh, really?
Little known fact.
Huh. That's a fun one.
That's a great tradition.
I was about to say a funner, which is not.
That's a funner. Hey, we got a funner on our hands.
Uh-oh. All right. I'm going to do a quick bit of recap, but then I want to talk about this episode because this was a wild time.
Hell of an app.
We should talk about it. I guess, you know, let's
do you want
take
to talk
a break
about
from our,
Riverdale on our podcast?
Let's take a break from our usual content and talk about Riverdale. You know?
Okay. Yeah,
the episode
good.
Is worth it.
So much stuff going into this one, but the big things you need to know are there are two ongoing mysteries. Jughead has been following the mystery of the Mothmen, so-called aliens that seem to be invading the town of Riverdale for a very long time. There was a maple-soaked alien that was given to him and Tabitha Tate by Nana Rose back in the day. It disappeared. We didn't know how. Meanwhile, on the other side of things, Betty has been investigating the mystery of the Lonely Highway that sees she has assumed, and assumed correctly as it turns out, that there are a bunch of murderous truckers along the highway all working together to kill young girls on the highway, kidnap them and murder them, including potentially her sister, Polly Cooper, which kicked off this whole thing and the main reason that she has been tracking them down. Now, Tabitha has been working with both of them on and off to help them in their various mysteries. Meanwhile, excuse me, on the other side of town, Hiram Lodge has been after the town's palladium, a very rich metal that is buried under the town. In order to get ahead of him, Cheryl Blossom and Archie have teamed up to mine the Blossom family mines and get the palladium out of there, along with his army buddy, Eric, his uncle Frank, Kevin Keller, a couple of other people. Fangs, I believe, is there as a miner as well. And turns out, lots of other miners by the end of the episode.
A lot of miners.
So it's not just them solo on the team, but they're working to get the palladium out of working for Cheryl, the other rich person in town. Also important to mention that Archie was seeing the ghosts of his ex-squad mates from his time in the army. He seemed to have exorcised those ghosts when they got back into regular clothes, which is how you know that ghosts have been exercised. But
yeah,
as
when
we
ghosts
find out,
change their clothes, something's up.
Well, it's nice to say, take a moment, and they were like, you thought we were gone, but we had to come back because you're super stressed out. So here we are again.
Yeah. You know you've truly busted a ghost when they're wearing, like, Old Navy performance fleeces or whatever those soldiers were wearing in the last episode.
That's what they did in the Ghostbusters movie, right? They took them shopping at readily affordable chain stores.
Yeah, they put that Stave Puff Marshmallow Man in some sweet jeans from Aeropostale.
So the other thing that's been going on with Archie is he has put his relationship with Veronica on a break because she's married to a guy named Chadwick, who is an absolute jerk, has taken all of her money, ruined their finances, but has also been working closely with Hiram, Veronica's father, who, of course, has it out for Archie because he has romanced his only daughter, for far too long and tried to kill him several times.
He's unkillable.
Archie is unkillable. Also, Hiram, surprisingly unkillable. Also, yeah. Most of these characters, let's be honest, unkillable, except for two that we'll get to by the end of the episode.
And last but certainly not least,
Cheryl Blossom has been building up a ministry in her house, one that she co-opted from her mother, Penelope. Penelope started as a scam based on her son, Jason, but Cheryl took it over along with Kevin, turned it first into a musical theater ministry and then into a magic ministry, and then started to take it very, very seriously. We also, in this episode, loop back to something that we had thought was going to happen with this ministry way back in the first half of the season, which was the first half of this year, that they're going to be praying to a wind god. We loop all the way around to that by the end
Turns
of this episode.
Turns out she's the fifth element.
Yes, Corbin Dallas multipass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think, actually, I looked this up recently, and the line is actually Lilo Dallas multipass. Everybody says Corbin Dallas multipass, but that's wrong.
I think she says both.
Does she say both?
Yes.
Okay.
She says that line a lot in a lot of different ways when they're trying to get onto the ship where the opera singer has rocks in her body.
Yeah. Anyway, as we all agree, Cheryl, like Pete said, is the fifth element, which, spoiler, is love. And last but not least, sorry to spoil the fifth element, a movie that conservatively is 30 years old.
Oh,
and
man.
Let me also say that's the least important part of the movie.
My favorite part while we're talking about the fifth element is the giant ball of evil that calls Gary Oldman on the phone.
Yes.
He's best part of the movie. Great. Good stuff across the board. Last thing to talk about, though, is Toni Topaz had her baby, who is named Little Tony, a.k.a. Little Anthony. And she has decided to raise the baby decided along with Fangs to raise the baby together. Fangs used to be with Kevin. That doesn't really play into the equation here, but they're living together. They're old friends and they're working out together. And also playing into their storyline this episode is a character named Britta, who was introduced after the time jump. She's a student at the school and she's been involved in a bunch of different things. But we find out a lot more about her this episode. So much stuff to talk about. And not only that, we got a lot of questions and comments and theories from all you listening out here on Instagram and Twitter. So hopefully, there's so much to talk about, but hopefully we can get to a couple of them at the end of the podcast.
It's this crazy in an episode that did 50 things and called back threads that we've, like, when they were like, well, my student Lerman or whatever, I was like, what? Oh, thank God they showed a photo or a little image of him, because I was like, that feels like from my youth so long ago.
This had big second to last episode vibes in this episode, which I think was purposeful. This is something that I think most of the Riverdale fans probably know, but Greg Berlanti, who's the super producer that produces Riverdale and a ton of other shows, he has this whole thing where he says what you want to do is you don't save everything for the finale, because then you don't have time to deal with the emotional fallout. Instead, figure everything out, the big mystery of the season, second to last, and then you have a whole episode to deal with the emotional fallout there, set up the next season, and then you don't have to deal with it in the next season and slow things down.
This was most famously used by the TV show Lost, where they had a great second to last season and then really just let the last one be off.
All right. Come on.
Did you just call him a super producer?
He's a super producer.
Like you said it so matter of fact, like it was a title, like, you know.
Not only is he a wonderful producer, super producer, not only does he produce a lot of shows, but he also produces all of the CW superhero shows. So, hat trick.
Okay.
Anyway, my point being, Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa has been pretty upfront about how much of an impact that made on him for Riverdale. So if you look at season one and two, and four, I think, kind of specifically, although obviously that got broken up, you can see that pattern there where the mystery wrapped up and then the next episode was left for the emotion. I think what we're getting here is a different riff on it, where we're getting all the mysteries wrapped up in this episode, dealing with the emotional ramifications in the next episode. And to speculate wildly, I think the last episode of the season is going to be dealing with the big thrust of post-time jump, which is Save Riverdale. So that's where I think we're going to get that emotional wrap up there, which I'm very excited about.
It is this season sort of has like accordion structure to it. Like, we started with, we have to save Riverdale, and then we've done a bunch of other things. All those have all tied up, and we're left with only Save Riverdale as well by the end of it. So that's exciting. Also, the relationships are back sort of where they were at post-Barchi, and I'm very curious if that will also expand back out into that.
Yeah,
into
we'll definitely talk
or
about
or everybody will just fall back in with who they belong with. You know what I mean? Huh. Like, or that's going to happen.
So I can't believe my ears. Are you disagreeing with me about Barchi and Bughead? So I just really, I guess that plot thread has yet to be tied up in our podcast. Okay.
Yes, we'll talk about all of that because there is definitely a lot to talk about there. As you can imagine, the fans are definitely talking about it since the episode aired. But I just wanted to say broad strokes. I know we mentioned this a couple of times. I thought this episode was great. I thought this was so well done.
Really,
so much good stuff going on. So many threads. So much wild stuff. Just a really good episode of Riverdale.
So much was happening. It was dark. Though by the end of the episode, I was like, oh, man, I can't believe this show went all this way to that level. Like, we've talked about Dark Betty, and she's been on this dark path. I thought she was going to come out of it. Instead, the whole show was like, nope, we're all going to settle down right next to old Betty.
Yeah, let's all just snuggle up to Betty and, you know, just really enjoy where she is.
Well,
but
here's
a truly well done episode across the board. I thought everything played off each other in a great way.
I mean,
it
here's
was
my theory
back
here.
To the Riverdale kind of like pace, breakneck kind of action that we're used to, where there's so much happening at once, you can't believe like some people are over here, some people are over there, and you're just like, there's too much time. It's just
too
so crazy.
Too much time.
It was great. It was really exciting.
I was going to say something about the end of the episode, but I'll save it until we get there. So why don't we start walking through things? It starts off picking up a classic Riverdale with the end of the last episode is Betty and Tabitha walking the lonely highway, trying to get trucks, and Jughead being like, and the worst is yet to come. And you're like, oh, geez, Betty and Tabitha are going to be taken.
Shit.
And the next episode picks up like, well, nothing for 10 days.
Nothing for 10 nights. So on the lonely highway.
So they're fine. They have a little bit of a spat there because Betty not so subtly thinks she should be flying solo. Doesn't appreciate that Tabitha's there. Thank goodness Tabitha's there because there have been no murders, which she thinks is good. Again, Betty thinks that's bad because the serial killers are too quiet. Their need to murder is going to get built up.
A little crazy how quickly Betty was like, you know, let me tell you about the inside of a murderer's brain.
Yeah. Mm. She knows that a serial killer's motto is ABM, always be murdering.
First prize is a set of steak knives. Second prize is a set of steak knives.
Oh, what a great Dr. Curdle impression you're doing.
Teeing it up for the first of many incredible Dr. Curdle lines this episode.
Oh, man.
Listen, there is not a normal phone call from Dr. Curdle the entire time. And this one kicks off with the amazing line, I'm calling about our tongueless friend.
Yeah, just truly no character on any TV show hits as hard as Dr. Curdle. Whether it's an episode like this or every line is a banger. He's like, I'm a creep and I'll show you in 9 different ways. Or that Josie and the Pussycats episode where he's just having a blast in his full Josie wear.
So fun. I not that we need to see this on TV, but every time there was like, hey, how are you doing? Good, good. Well, anyway, I'm calling about our tongueless. Nope, he just launches right into it. It's great. Yeah. But Curdle essentially wants more money. He says he's going to incinerate the body. We didn't mention this, but there was a trucker that Betty was interrogating. She found out a lot more information about what was going on, but the trucker killed himself by swallowing his own tongue. And Betty says, okay, fine, she's going to cover the expenses. Also, maybe he's drinking hot cocoa with whipped cream at the scene.
My big note coming out of this scene was he drinking hot chocolate? Because that's a man who needs a warm hug. He loves a comforting hot cocoa. At the end of a long day in that chilly little morgue.
Or, yeah, it's got to be cold in that morgue.
Then we get a scene with Cheryl and Archie, essentially there, I think, to recap exactly what's been going on with the mind stuff and remind us that wasn't just a one-off for one episode. Archie reminding us that, hey, I'm still trying to save Riverdale, and Cheryl gives a little shade to it saying, what are you doing, filling potholes?
He's like, I'm in charge of Riverdale's infrastructure. I was like, oh. How did that feel saying out loud? Are you fucking serious? If that was true, you wouldn't have time for all these shenanigans, man. That's a full-time job.
I bet a lot of the liberals in Riverdale are always tweeting, whoa, is it infrastructure week again? At Archie.
You know? Yeah. What? That's the last thing a lot of people tweet before they're like murdered by the wind or something. In this.
Yeah, that's a very specific niche joke. Don't anybody worry about it. I'll edit it out of the podcast later.
Okay, great.
Nice.
So they talk about the money. They talk about the mine and what they're going to do there. There's also a brief bit of Chime product placement going on.
And then also like, you know, it was basically Archie being like, we need money. You're working us to the bone. She was like, fine, here's some more scraps. He was like, we'll work for you forever. It was like, come on, Archie. Jesus.
She sends him $517.
Yeah.
Which was this season 5, episode 17? I saw someone tweet that on. What a weird small thing.
Well, that's. Yeah. This is something that I think actually Natalie Bolt put on Instagram while she was directing the episode, if I remember correctly, that it always says the number of the episode on the cash register on Pop's counter.
So
that was probably another shout out there, nice. Which was fun.
That's cool.
Also, when they said Chime, I was like, haha, what a fun Riverdale fake product. And then I guess actually it's a real product.
It's a real thing. Yep.
Yeah. I was like, what does Chime rhyme with? It's a cash app. And I was like, nope, just a real one.
So then we go over to Chad and Veronica, and Chad wants everything in the divorce, including the Pembroke. And we get, speaking of bangers of lines, Veronica legit like leveled up this episode.
Everything she said. Also, we've talked about how like all the other characters are traumatized, but Veronica seems fine. This episode, like, nope, I'm a stone cold killer. And you don't even know.
Yes, you don't even know.
Well, when she said, all I need is Archie, I fully was like, uh-oh.
Yeah,
this is stop. Shit's going down.
She the villain monologue that she's doing where she gives away her plans so that other people can be like, oh, well, if all you need is Archie, we can just take that away.
I know you really don't. You get so stressed, Pete, when Veronica tells us what she's doing.
Yeah, it's just she's just like completely fucking somebody over and then be like, the only thing I cherish in life is this. It's like, stop giving them the way to destroy you.
So here's the thing. I think we talked about this. It was the last episode, right, where Veronica won with the whole palladium thing, stole palladium from Hiram and gave that monologue. And you were pretty upset about that. Here, I think we're doubling down on the idea that, and I don't mean this necessarily exactly the way that I'm saying it, but she's the new Hiram. Like Hiram has the way that she lays it out to him at the end of the episode is 100% true. Now he is a clown. He has none of the power. She is the one in power. She knows what's going on and she feels invincible and badass. Granted, that is a perfect time for her to be knocked down from the mountain and suffer some serious, serious fall. But at least as of this episode, she's the winner here. Like, it's not tempting fate because she has won by the end of the episode.
You never win with Hiram. He's going to find a new way in and a new way to torture. And it just drives me nuts that she hasn't figured that out yet. It's like every time there's an evil thing. Oh, who's there? Hiram, are you kidding me? Stop giving him your plans. Stop talking to him. Stop going to him for advice. Just cut him the fuck out.
But I think as we saw, like she had him the whole time. He burned a photo, which means he's like, I retire from tormenting my daughter, Veronica.
That's not what that means. That means they're all dead to him and he's going to go out of his way to make their lives a living hell.
Whenever I finish a project, I take a picture of it and I hold it up and I burn it and I put it down on an ashtray. Yeah. And I'm like, finish that. This is a normal thing to do. What do you think of Hiram's nickname that's really starting to stick? Little bitch?
I don't know about that one.
Veronica calls him a little bitch twice in this episode, I think. And then Josie, was it Josie's mom who did in the episode a while back? Or was it
Josie?
Josie. Josie,
she says, I always knew you were a little bitch.
For no reason.
Here's the thing. I'm very split on it because the B word is one of my least favorite words in the English language, but it hits every time they use it in the show. I feel like
100%.
It's right on the line of, are they overusing it? I think maybe, but at the same time, it still gives it that punctuation they want rhythmically in every sentence.
That's a hell of a way to analyze it. It's just a funny way to refer to the villain of the show.
I think about it because I don't like the word and I don't like hearing the word. I definitely think about, like, okay, how am I feeling about this? Because every time they say it, I laugh out loud. So I'm like, what does that say about me? You know?
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. You truly are the Hiram here.
You were about to say something else, weren't you?
I would never. I don't use that. You. That's your secret nickname that Pete and I use when you're not around.
Oh, no.
Hey, is a little bitch on the podcast?
Oh, man. No, we do not. No,
so
we do
then
not.
We go over to Penelope. Penelope is really digging into Kevin here. She thinks Cheryl has twisted the ministry into the cult. Very, like, mirror exercise of that's what she was doing. Yeah. But she's getting real Wicker Man vibes off of the whole bee incident, which is accurate, mind you.
Exactly. Here's the thing. Penelope's not wrong here. She's like, hey, that whole bee thing was pretty weird, right? And Kevin's like, you know, when I took my musical theater coat off, I was like, you're right. That is weird that she controls bees.
Kevin making some good moves this episode for himself and being like,
yeah.
Kevin being like, maybe I'm not going to do this again.
Yeah. I'm kind of full up on crazy right now, but thank you.
Here's the thing, though. I don't like it because Kevin is finally doing something fun and interesting, and he's like, too rich for my blood. I'm like, you live in Riverdale, dude. You go between being a musical theater priest and a miner, mining palladium. Like, what do you want to go back to the mine more, where you're a third-tier member?
There's
of the
ghosts
squad?
Down there. There's ghosts in the mine. Also, Cheryl is also at the mine. So what's going to happen? What's going to happen?
And she's praying even harder at the mine on a very nice little pillow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then we go over to Tabitha, and we loop back to something from the very beginning of the season. Excuse me. She gets a call from Mrs. Fields. She realizes she hasn't heard from Squeaky, who's a character who used to work at Pops and left and got taken on the Lonely Highway. And that's how we get, finally.
That's the reminder that's going to come up huge later. It's like, hey, remember this character? This is going to play in.
She's dead. Yeah, that's why we're
bothering. FYI.
Do you think this is the same Mrs. Fields from the cookies?
That's exactly what I thought.
Yeah,
I know. I knew you did because you're Mr. Sweet Tooth. That's your public nickname, Mr. Sweet Tooth.
What's my private nickname again, real quick?
Little bitch.
Tony comes to work then, and we get a great scene with Tony. This plot line was great, particularly in the middle of such a crazy episode, to have really nuanced discussions about coming out between Tony and Fangs and Britta. Super impressive. But Tony comes to work. Britta was in a fight. She punched Tim Higgins. Was it Tim Higgins, I believe?
Tim Riggins.
Tim Riggins from Friday Night Lights. Bad move.
You don't want to punch him.
Yeah. He's a big guy. He was in Battleship, Pete's favorite movie. Right, Pete?
Great movie.
And he's in your favorite movie as well, John Carter.
Yeah. Really calling ourselves out here. Yeah. So Britta was getting called homophobic names, and Britta says, but the thing is, I think I actually am gay. I just don't know how to tell my parents. And Tony talks about how coming out is a process. The line she says is, only you get to decide when it's the right time for you, which I thought was really nice.
That's a great line.
Yeah. And then we go back.
Real quick on that, because I agree. I thought this was such a nice, like, breather from all the chaos of every other plot line in the episode. And having Tony back and be this sort of center, like, truly she, as much as Archie's like, I'm going to save Riverdale, Tony is Riverdale. She's the one who's at the core of the town, is sort of pressing the values of Riverdale, of, like, taking care of people, doing the right thing, all that. She's sort of bearing that for everyone, and was while everyone was away doing all their stuff during the time jump. So it was great to see her. I also think in this, like, very honest, real story, the fact that it did cross over with the rest of the story at the end, I was like, whoa, okay. Wild.
But that's good. I mean, that's what Riverdale should be doing at its best. It takes these wild ideas and actually ties them together. Like, seeing two plot lines cross on Riverdale, when's the last time that happened?
Yeah, let alone all of them.
Yes, which is fantastic. I know it's hard to do, but I wish it would happen more often because it's really satisfying when it does.
Yeah.
So we do go over to Hiram, who talks to Chad about Archie, tells him he has to use the ghost gun to kill Archie, which is a good choice because Archie has lots of ghosts around him. So if you want to take down Archie, you're going to want to use a ghost gun. Yes, Pete?
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, before we get into the whole ghost gun bits, I just wanted to say, like,
they're not bits. I'm serious about this.
Okay. Well, You can't say ghost gun on Riverdale. It's just there's too many.
They say it a lot.
Yeah, they do. And I really wanted him, when he reached for the gun, for his hand to go through the gun. And Hiram be like, it's a ghost gun, you asshole.
Psych, happy Halloween.
Yeah. But also, this, like, for a second, I really love the idea of, like, people coming to Hiram for relationship advice, and he's always like, you want to save your marriage? Kill Archie. Yeah. Hey, you having issues? Kill Archie. Like, come on down to Kill Archie's. It solves all your problems. You know,
I just imagine... I just imagine him having like a drawer full of 50 Archie ghost guns. And he's like, here you go. What are you up to? We're going to need a, this plot line is especially triggering or ghost triggering for me because I was the guy that brought a ghost knife to a ghost gun fight.
Oh man. That's really sad. That's going to be a ghost problem right there.
Yeah, exactly. It's a ghost problem.
Yeah. You could turn into a ghost from a problem.
That's why
like
I'm
that.
A ghost man.
So then we go back to Kevin, who, a very funny little thing, is reading Wicker Man in the school lounge. Cheryl comes in. Kevin asks questions, sort of kind of pushes her a little bit about the religion.
Who,
and she says,
who are we praying to?
Yeah. And she says, let me fast on it. Basically, she's going to do a juice cleanse is her idea of how she's going to do religion.
But the refill with wisdom, that just... I mean, even when Cheryl's lying right to his face, she does it in such a way where you're kind of like, all right.
I don't think she was lying. I think she believes all of this. And I think it was a sort of a graphic way to describe what a cleanse does to your body. It's like, once I'm all drained out, you know, from pooping and everything, then I'm going to fill up with the Holy Spirit. I was like, okay, Cheryl, we don't need, it's like an instruction booklet.
And then... we go over to a big scene that kicks off a big, highly anticipated plot line that I'm sure we're going to get into in a nice, reasonable manner with no back and forth whatsoever. Tabitha talks to Jughead and Betty
about
Squeaky.
Tabitha's like, why are we doing this separately? It doesn't make any sense. We get the real team together that can really solve some mysteries. And, oh, the magic, the sparks, the problems all started to come together because the super team is back on the case.
I will say they did very effectively solve a lot of mysteries when they started working together.
Yep.
I will say, though, I was surprised that there were no sparks and there was no relationship mention or even a look, I feel like, during this whole thing. And
how
I thought for sure there would be.
Fucking dare you.
There wasn't. Can you point to one?
Yeah. There was a ton. Like every time when he took his glasses off and started to talk about his case and broke it down, and the way they were kind of like talking. It was almost like one sentence, the way they were just finishing each other's ideas. Yeah. It was sparks and magic flying back and forth.
Yeah. No, I know.
I'll just say
it's
that
just
moment,
like right now.
I agree with Pete. Sorry to break in, but I agree with Pete that moment when Jughead took down off his glasses and shook down his hair and Betty suddenly realized he was beautiful. That was great. It was magical.
It was. The slow motion, the very long slow motion. I mean, it's true. You're right, Pete. Anytime I talk to a person about something, I'm definitely flirting aggressively with them. Just like right now in this podcast. I can't believe the chemistry between the three of us going right now. The way you just took your glasses off and put them back on.
I think that this is the start of it, okay? You're not immediately going to start to see the sparks, but the fact that they clicked right back in and really kind of made a difference teaming up, I think that's going to go a long way, but only time will tell.
Sparks are famously slow-moving and easy to watch slowly develop over time.
Well, sometimes it takes a little work to get those going, but, you know, the pieces are there.
I'm going to throw something out here that I'm definitely not going to regret in any way saying out loud, but I have been thinking about for probably the past week or so and wanted to talk about on the podcast, specifically about this subject. It was something I was thinking about before this episode a little bit, and I think this episode doubled down on it, is I think not having to do with romance necessarily, but just the characters and the way they work together. Betty and Jughead is the spark that makes Riverdale work. And what I mean by that, again, I'm not necessarily talking about the relationship. That's almost side to it. But like we're talking about, purposefully so, the writers kept them apart all season. So the mysteries were in disarray. They couldn't solve them without each other. You get them together. And again, it's a very purposeful structural thing. 13 episodes apart, they're like, well, can't solve these mysteries. In like 5 minutes, they figure out exactly what's going on and they make it work. And I really do think this thing they figured out very early on about Betty and Jughead as characters off of their Archie comics, the way they were as icons, you never really put them together in the comics this way. In fact, if anything, they're often apart and Jughead is weird around Betty. Yeah. Putting them together and getting Lily Reinhart and Cole Sprouse to work together and work off of each other and work opposite each other really elevates the show. They're not the only element that elevates the show. Obviously, there's lots of things that we love about it, but there's something about that surprising pairing that really worked right off from the very beginning of Riverdale. And not having that season, again, I think without knowing much about the behind-the-scenes process, I think they made a very clear decision to be like, let's build this anticipation. Let's take them off the board, separate them. What is the show? What is the town like? What are the friend group like without Betty and Jughead working together? And we finally see that again. Do they need to be romantically paired going forward? Not necessarily. And in fact, maybe not. But
I don't think so.
I do think working together is the thing they have learned is important to do going forward. And I think that's going to really hit the pedal to the metal going forward in these last two episodes and also going into next season.
Where you started is you started with facts, but then you kind of went into justification, like, oh, should they be romantically dating? Where you started was great.
Perhaps the greatest love of all is between two people who, distantly solve mysteries together. Romeo and Juliet famously were in the same room who solved the mystery.
Sharing case folders, sharing ideas, opening up to each other.
What clue over yonder window breaks?
Tis the East, and oh shit, a Mothman. I still remember my first case that I shared with my true first love. Just manila folder going back and forth.
Oh, God. Man. Yeah, that's magical touch. Anyways, so we get that, but then
Don't say we get that, because I know you're already five scenes ahead of where we actually are in the episode, Pete. We're back at Tabitha in the booth at Pops. She says, everyone tells me there wasn't a mystery you two could solve back in the day. And Tabitha says, listen, Jughead, I'm going to pay you. Don't worry about it, because he starts getting nervous.
Paid to solve crimes. Come on.
Paid to solve crimes. And I honestly think this kind of points to maybe what's going to happen going forward is Betty's not in the FBI, even if she's working with them. Jughead is just working at Pops and doesn't feel particularly happy with his wife. I think there's a possibility they might open up a detective agency together.
Oh, yeah. Out of Pops.
Two on the nose.
Call it the blue and gold. Right?
That's cool. I like that. I just think they can't actually, their job, be solving mysteries. It's too on the nose, I think. They have to solve mysteries that attack them from afar or whatever.
Sure.
You think they need to go into a mystery machine and then drive around and try to solve mysteries?
Exactly. I mean, Old Man Dreyfus is a Scooby-Doo villain.
Yeah, I know. Like, that was Old Man Dreyfus.
Yeah,
it's great. Good stuff. We get a little bit of the Bughead theme in the background as they agree to team up, which is very cute. Chad tries to shoot Archie.
All right, that's what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, go ahead.
Archie can dodge bullets.
Yo,
like,
Archie,
dude,
fully
straight up shot. And Archie dives like just absolutely fucking Matrix in between bullets, and then is somehow like Captain America picks up an old-timey trash bin that nobody makes anymore, but because we don't know what year Riverdale is, they still have old-timey trash bins, and takes them out like it's a Captain America shield.
I hope that was a ghost garbage can lid, because they're going to trace that back to Archie, and he is absolutely deadly with it.
Yeah.
How many garbage can lids does he have waiting to hand out to people that are going to wreck Hiram?
So, question. I think I could figure this one out, but it was a weird little plot thing to me that Chad, who is completely incompetent, drops the gun, and Veronica's like, we got the gun, you left it, Chad. But also, the whole point of the ghost gun is it's an untraceable gun, right?
Yeah, but if you got your fingerprints all over it, you can trace it.
Was he holding
it
with his bare hands? I didn't actually check.
I
wasn't looking at his hands, if you know what I mean.
The way she talked to Veronica.
Eyes up here, Zalman.
The way that Veronica talked to him was like, you idiot, you dropped the gun. It's like Veronica's been on a a million murder things and knows better than they drop the gun.
She's grown up in Riverdale. She knows all about it.
That's true.
Plus, how many people in town have like a pearl-handled ghost gun? Like, it's clearly something he got from Hiram.
So Jughead breaks it all down with Betty, as Pete mentioned. We get that scene. She thinks it's a family of truckers who've been kidnapping and murdering sex workers
just
and other women.
Just magical the way.
And he remembers Logan Marshall Lerman, his student.
Connections. It's just, oh.
Well, I mean, the moment that I thought was so funny in this is Jughead just being like, so Betty, a guy swallowed his tongue to get away from you? Could you just walk me through this one more time? I can't believe that he's just totally straight-manning the insanity of her life lately. It's very fun.
Yeah. So great delivery on that. And then Dr. Colonel Jr. calls in with, another body's been brought in from Swedwell Swamp, Miss Cooper.
You know his first call anytime a body comes in is straight to Betty. Like, hey, another bunch of bones we found. You want to have first dibs on them?
And it turns out it could be Polly or it could be Squeaky. They decide to get DNA testing
on
both just to make sure.
We all know who
it's going to
be.
Well, I don't think we did necessarily because we already had a fake out body early on this season. And
yeah,
again,
but they brought up Squeaky out of nowhere to remind us and then said, hey, it could be your sister or this other random character we just brought up.
I agree with you, Pete, but the way the episode ended proves that they are willing to go anywhere at any time in this show.
Yeah. So then we go over to the Veronica scene we mentioned earlier. She now wants everything from Chad because you dropped the gun, idiot, check and mate, you little B-word. And then we go over to an enormous brunch spread. Penelope is going to town on a croissant.
Oh, man.
Big Last Supper feels going on here with
just
Cheryl,
because
Kevin,
Cheryl
Nana,
is
Penelope.
Fasting. And that's a classic, like, evil mom move, just to kind of be like, oh, did you want any of this? Oh, are you fasting? I forgot.
Well, you know it's hard to get pastries when you're living in a wall.
Cheryl almost collapses, and then Chad goes over to Hiram, lies, tells him the gun misfired. Hiram yells at him, says Archie stole your wife. Very, very Borat delivery on that line from Mark Consuelos. Hiram tells Chad, get out of town. At that point, we get Archie about to exit to the mine. Veronica has just been waiting there the entire time, maybe hours at this point. Comes in, says she's got the divorce papers.
Hi, handsome.
He smiles.
Oh,
sex
it is
montage.
Fucking on.
It is on.
Very intense music playing. And this was, it's very funny how letter of the law they've been taking their relationship with, like, she's like, here's the papers. Get your clothes off, redhead.
I'll tell you what. I mean, this is probably part of spending too much time looking at the online conversation about the show, which, you know, looks forward and speculates and everything. So I was surprised how hard Varchi came back this episode, but I thought
it was great.
Like, really stuck to it, that they made this agreement. Like, again, this kind of gets to Riverdale sort of sometimes not exactly following up on the place where people were emotionally the last time. And the fact that the last conversation Veronica and Archie had about this was, we really want to be with each other. We can't do this until you're divorced. That they followed it up and they're like, second it happens, we are right back in it. We're taking bubble baths. Let's go. I thought it was really good. Like, it was a good follow up.
And it's also impressive that Veronica almost died setting up that bubble bath. But then didn't have any problem with getting in that bubble bath with Archie later. I mean, that's impressive. That shows you how much she loves him.
If there's one thing we learned about this episode, Veronica has no problem moving on from a stressful situation.
Then, speaking of stressful situations, we go over to Betty, who sees Alice is heading out to the TV station to do some news. Betty tells her she doesn't know if the body is Polly. And then back over to Cheryl, who has made a painting of earth, water, fire, and wind, and realizes the highest power is nature itself. That's who they're going to worship. They're going to worship Gaia, Mother Earth. At which point Kevin's like, no, I'm out. Thank you.
I'm out. I've had enough, Cheryl.
This painting's too weird. Now, do you think this painting had clues for what's going to come in the last two episodes of this season? Because there was a lot of stuff in the painting that was never touched upon. You got the red bird in the sky. I'm assuming that's Cheryl.
Yep.
Angel. Flaming.
No, the
boat.
Red bird in the sky is Jason, because remember she saw
the red bird
a couple of episodes back.
The flying woman.
Oh, right, because she's the angel,
Yeah.
Yes.
The flaming boat, and then two snakes underwater. They never reference the snakes at all in the conversation they have. So it feels like there's something here.
Juniper and Dagwood, they're the two snakes. Don't trust those kids.
No. What it is like you want to be thinking about it like walls to a building. That's Cheryl's mom and Nana behind the walls pulling the strings.
I mean, the two that might actually be exactly right, possibly.
Yeah, but it's a good
Kevin
call.
Is out. Penelope's hiding on the stairs watching. For a second, I thought she was going back into the walls, but she was not.
That was a wall. That wasn't stairs. I was she's stairs. Behind the walls.
Bit of it a counts. Bummer there.
It counts.
Jughead has offered Logan his first edition War of the Worlds, but it turns out actually it's a fifth edition, which is a very funny aside joke there.
Weird prank.
To come and talk to them. And then we get a gut-wrenching scene of Alice addressing the town and saying, listen, whoever this is, tell me my daughter is dead. That's all I want to know. I can't keep wondering about it. Awful.
Horrible. Yeah.
Also, a little note that I noticed during the scene, Pops serves chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, and blueberry shakes, which is weird.
That is weird.
Why are you hating on blueberry shakes, bro?
Is blueberry shakes a thing?
It's a very low-tier shake.
It's more of a smoothie than a shake, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't know. It threw me a little bit.
What are other shakes?
Don't come after blueberry.
It's a weird – I agree with Alex. It's a weird shake. There are a ton of other shakes that would occupy the middle area.
I love
a
good black and white shake.
You do like a black and white shake.
Oh, man, I talk about that a lot. I would say make a choice.
Then we go to Fangs and Tony. They're talking, drinking wine. He's massaging her feet, and they talk about –
what a foot rub. I loved it.
Sick. And we talk about the Britta situation again. Apparently, Britta's parents, when Tony went over, were not great about it and said, are you sure? Do you have to be to Britta? Fangs canonically establishes that he's bi. That was kind of an open question based on some stuff that he said to Kevin a couple of episodes back. But he says he's bisexual. And when he came out, his dad told him, great, you can choose. So choose being with a woman. And they talk also about baby Anthony, and Tony says, no matter what baby Anthony is, I'll be ecstatic, which is really wonderful. Now, let's talk about this a little bit, just the Fangs and Tony of it all, because, again, I think people were really worried when Stills came out of the two of them that the show was going to put them in some sort of romantic situation. I'm of the mind that this wasn't romance, and this wasn't romantic. What do you
guys
think?
Definitely not. I fully agree. This feels like they are co-parenting this baby, and they're like, hey, we are who we are. We want to do this. And by the end of the episode, they're like, we are doing it.
They're friends, and they love and support each other. But yeah, that's no.
And I hope it sticks with that, too. I got a little worried when they established Fangs is bisexual, and Tony was like, I'm also bisexual, establishing, hey, there's the possibility that we could date each other and be okay, potentially, down the road. But I like this arrangement a lot better. I think this is interesting. You don't see it on TV a lot. A really healthy co-parenting relationship would be very cool to see and watch going forward. So, again, I hope they stick with it. Yeah.
And then
Hiram, listening to a timer, he loves explosions.
How crazy and amazing of a shot was that? We're watching a counter go 5, 4, and you're like, what? What is happening? What is going on? And then it cuts to the mind. I was just like, holy shit, what a great way to show that, to kind of like show the evil mastermind kind of at his desk watching this plan. I thought that was such a crazy, fucked up, amazing way to do that.
It was cool. And I don't know when he had time to go to Radio Shack and get a 1980s bomb timer to have.
Well, time doesn't, it's all very fluid on this show. So
exactly. So he blew up the mine. Archie runs to find Eric, who is trapped down below. They both get trapped, but everybody else gets out. Cheryl gets a call, has a great line here. What is it, you Philistine? I'm working on my 12 commandments. Yeah. Very funny. But she immediately springs into action as well, calls Veronica about the mine explosion. And then we go back to Jughead and Betty and Tabitha, who are talking to Logan. And we get some reveals here. It turns out that he was sleepwalking. He was taken somewhere, held inside something that looks like the inside of a spaceship, which is exactly what happened to Polly when she called Alice. It's the shed, as it turns out. And a Mothman freed him because it said he was taken by mistake, said never to tell anybody. So things are starting to come together, though they don't have all the clues on the table. Then we go over to Veronica, who will help the miners no matter the cost, doesn't even care. And she immediately realizes it was Hiram. We go inside the mine. Archie finds Jackson bloody and nearly dead, and Archie is going to dig them out. Lots of stuff happening quickly here. Then we go over to Kirtle, who ran the DNA. It turns out to be Squeaky, but he also ran Betty's DNA and found a match with the trucker who bit his tongue off. He's a distant cousin of hers.
Also, weird that he did some extra DNA checking, right?
That's exactly what I was going to say, Pete. Like Kirtle, he's up on the test.
What are you doing?
I work for Ancestry.com on the side.
I hope you're 09. I took a sample of your DNA. I've been running tests.
I ran my DNA, and I've been dead for 10 or 12 years.
But we do have Jughead immediately figure out exactly what's going on, because Betty points out all the Coopers are dead or accounted for. There's basically none left at this point. But Jughead says, what about the Blossoms? You guys are cousins. And they realize, wait a second, this is probably a Blossom. The morgue was broken into and the bodies were stolen. And so they also realize the Maple alien was also stolen. So there's some sort of connection there. Tabitha leaves and says, don't worry, I'll take care of stuff. I'll talk to Squeaky's family. But when it comes time to it, I want to be in on taking
she
them all
wants
down.
To be there. Yeah.
Yeah. So back to Hiram drinking from a very tiny glass.
A tiny sip from a very tiny glass before he gets a big old crack on the
head. Oh my God. Oh, clocked on
man. That was unbelievable. And you want to talk about like old timey, like whatever that like little thing she used. Oh man, that was crazy.
Chair-like.
Then we get to the most unbelievable part of the episode. Hiram wakes up, he's tied to a chair. And the idea that Hiram, who is jacked, could not rip his way out of
that.
Couldn't rip his way out of that, just burst the ropes with his pecs. Had a hard time believing that. To the point that he was sitting there, he was waiting on a rolling chair for Verona to get back. He could have rolled his way out of that office. Ridiculous. Wow. Ridiculous.
The least believable thing is that Hiram can ever be trapped anywhere.
Yeah, I don't think it could happen. But she gives this incredible speech laying out their whole history together, gives a shout out to Mrs. Burble and her estimation of them being in a dance of death, a tango de muerte.
Ooh, wow. Good. Almost.
Almost.
Pretty good. Close.
And calls back to ruining her quinceanera. And then we get the line. Quinceanera.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. I took French in high school, so
it shows with both the last two things that you've said.
Don't make me say the grandma word, because I really can't do that one.
Oh my God.
Abuelita.
Stop. No,
don't try it.
I can't
just
do it. I can't
walk
do it.
Away.
She gives a great line: if Archie dies, you die.
You die, yeah.
Very strong.
Love that. Yeah.
And then back to Betty and Jughead, who are very mean to Nana Rose.
Yo, I was like, how am I on Nana Rose's side here? Lay off, Betty.
Hey, you idiot. Look over here. I mean, granted, she has lied to them
Betty
a bunch of times.
Betty fucking being like, I don't have no time for your shit, Nana Rose, was amazing. And did the old fucking look at me. Look at you like, oh.
She has a lazy eye, Betty. Give her a break on the look at
this
stuff.
No, Betty.
I mean, granted that we get an insane amount of information laid out very quickly, which is that the Maple alien was Cousin Timothy, which is very funny. Nana's husband, still unnamed, I believe. We don't actually know what his name is, but Nana's husband slept around so much that he had a bunch of...
He made the beast. He made the beast.
Oh, so maybe it meant something else. Maybe he was creating monsters.
Yeah.
Nana Rose was like, I was just giving kids away at that point.
Gave them to a family called the Starkweathers, who live in the woods. And Jughead lays it out. You're saying there's a secret illegitimate clan of Blossoms that have been living in the woods for two generations. And I'll tell you what, we kind of called it months ago.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
The hills have eyes.
The classic, like, Jughead going, wait a second. You're telling me there's Blossoms that live in the woods? And what's hilarious is hearing that, I was like, it makes sense. I would buy that. I would believe that.
And they created the Mothmen because they live in the woods and they needed to do something fun. They actually moved into the mines, which was another thing that we had speculated about, that maybe there was some sort of family living in the mines. So I'll say we called that as well. And then they moved over to the line. Us, the whole podcast. Come on. It's a group thing. One thing we didn't predict
chemistry
is that old man Dreyfus is his first name. Not his last name. Yeah. His full name is Dreyfus Starkweather, and he is the person all behind it. We go over to Cheryl, who is praying for the miners. Turns out, as we mentioned, there's a lot of them. They're clearing the rocks, but Archie can't clear the rocks fast enough. He's starting to cough. He's starting to lose it, at which point Bingo's ghost, his squad mate, who he thought he left to die, but actually was okay with it, and one of the ghosts that he exercised, gives him a pet talk, and then all the ghosts help Archie clear the rocks.
I thought this was cool. I thought this was a great way to use the whole ghost thing we had before and flip it to be like a superpower almost for Archie. And yeah. Like to say like, I'm just one man. He's like, you're way more than one man. I thought it was so cool because it was a metaphor for all of the ghosts he has helping in him. And also the fact that he has 50 jobs, it makes a lot of sense that he's more than one man.
Yeah, and they were also like, come on, you fucking goon squad. You do crazy shit all the time. What's the difference for this? All you got to do is run, maybe move 2 tons of rocks. Come on, bro. You can do that.
I want to see Bingo the Friendly Ghost spinoff of Riverdale. That's what I want out of this.
Well, Justin, I disagree. He did not. As we saw, Cheryl moved the earth so that he could just walk out.
We'll get there in a second. So Tony tells Betty and Jughead that Britta ran away, and they realize maybe she went to the Lonely Highway and got stolen. A little bit of a logical leap there, but they turn out to be right, so it's okay. Yeah. Tony wants to come with them to take down the highway killers. Fangs is not cool with it. Fangs ultimately wants to come, leaves baby Anthony with his mom. Tony's got a taser and is ready to go. Yeah. Then we go over to Cheryl and Veronica.
Tony's got a tase.
Then we go over to Cheryl and Veronica, a pairing that I feel like we don't see a whole lot. So it was nice to see them talking and being friends. But Cheryl takes the first aid kit, fixes up Veronica's hand. She's gotten it split and open while she's been moving some rocks. And Cheryl prays, calls on fire, wind, water, and earth. And it seems to be working.
It fucking worked. I don't know what you're talking about. The fire got real big. The wind started to move. So, yeah, earth moved, and he walked right out.
Both this and the Archie ghost things is the closest that Riverdale has gotten to something actually supernatural. But I still think it's on the side of not supernatural.
What? Yes. I think the wind was whipping up. That's what made the fire
just
burst.
Happened to be whipping up as she's praying to it. It just happened the fire got bigger, and then just happened that Archie walked out after she opened up the fucking cave for him.
I would also argue, I think in that scene, we are sort of in Cheryl's headspace, and she, over the course of the season, has started to believe her own hype. And I think that's where we're headed in these final two episodes.
The reason she believes her own hype is she was able to not get stung by the bees and then have the powers of the elements at her disposal.
Well, I think we got a believer over here. We got the new Kevin. Yeah. Pete's the new Kevin. I look forward to your sparkle cook down at...
I managed to not get stung by bees every day. Am I also a god, Pete?
No. Oh, no, you're not.
You're then we a little bitch.
Classic montage here of Veronica getting ready to take a bath when Chad comes in to kill her. And then we go over to Cheryl watching Archie emerge. Really emotional stuff from Cheryl in these scenes,
really
too.
Really good. Just, yeah, I know.
The intensity she brought to here was kind of amazing. But then Chad doesn't see Veronica in the tub. We get another, I think this time, not real product placement where she calls on Pippi, her personal assistant.
This felt like a Siri or an Alexa.
What is the joke here? Is it just Siri, but Pippi? Because I kept looking
like
at it.
Alexa.
It's like
Alexa.
Yeah, no, I know. But like, it's not. Pippi Longstocking is not a joke. I was thinking.
Alex,
about
it's like in a lot of people in their house have these boxes that you can ask to do stuff.
And I ask a bunch of boxes to do stuff, and they never do anything. They just continue to be cardboard.
Ask them to be cardboard. See what happens.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'll try.
Maybe
that tonight.
I get more in touch with the elements.
So Veronica continued to be an absolute insane badass this episode.
Unbelievable, this move here. And also Chadwick cannot handle a gun.
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. Turns off the lights. Pumps
and he hates
the vodka,
loud music. Yeah.
And does the classic mirror trick. He shoots the mirror version of Veronica, which gives her enough time to knock the gun out of the hand. And as Smither enters, she shoots Chad dead.
Twice in the chest,
and then gets a phone call.
Takes the phone call.
Well, she is from the Archie news, some hot Archie news. I think my favorite part of the scene was Smithers coming in, who seems to be a bit of a shopaholic. Am I right?
Oh, you think those are his packages?
I don't know. He's walking with a bunch of boxes. He's spending too much money. He's got to get it under control.
Yeah.
Hey,
empty the cart. I don't know. Smithers seems a little bit out of sorts when he walks in to see a murdered husband.
Yeah, but he was
Veronica.
Very
I'm with Veronica.
Cool about it.
I'm with Veronica. Bang, bang, back to business.
Yeah.
So then she goes over to Hiram, who is still in the chair, inexplicably. We all agree on this, moving on. And Veronica says she is not there to kill him. Archie is alive, and now you're just this silly cartoon. So Veronica probably explains that Chad is dead to him, to ask Dr. Kirtle about it, and then finishes with a little bye, a little B-word.
Little bitch. The amount of ice cold she is in the scene is unbelievable.
Off
she just killed her ex-husband, and she goes to rub it in her father's face and threatens him, calls his name, and rather than be like, yeah, Chad's dead, she's like, go down to the morgue and see his body, you little bitch. It's like, yo. I was like, cool it, Veronica. You're stressing me out.
I thought this was great. Camilla Mendes just nailed this. It's... Like, I'm sure this is something, I think this is one of the questions if we get to them later, but like, there's a lot of discussion about, wait, is she a villain now? What's going on? I don't think she is. This is her, like, she has been tortured. She has been tortured for like over a decade, and in fact, her entire life by this guy. She's finally got her power back. Maybe she's overcorrecting a little bit, but it's well deserved.
I'm surprised she didn't cap him in the knee or something, you know?
Yeah.
You want to know what Veronica is? She's a boss. There's no other person on the show with more power right now.
100%. Betty, Jughead, Tony, Fangs, and Tabitha get ready to invade the junkyard. Jughead is the distraction, asks Old Man Dreyfus to have a drink and chat inside. And he does. Again, this was very relieving to see, like a classic Jughead laying everything out to the villain.
It was like, hey, can I take a stab at it? I want to see what you think. It was,
and I love the back and forth with Jughead sort of narrating and the discussion they're having, playing with the action. I got to give a shout out to Dreyfus's cartoon moonshine bottle that he has.
Yeah, the three X's on it. Come on.
It was the size of a propane tank. It was so big.
So he reveals that he knows Dreyfus's family is the Mothman, lays out everything that happened. I did like the line, we realized you were there because you were getting your regular Thursday night order of pork chops.
Wow. Which, always working at the diner. Yeah. Always playing the game.
And he admits it. Dreyfus and his inbred brothers drive the lonely highway searching for women to murder. They initially did it to survive, didn't need a lot of money off of that, but ultimately became about hunting. There's a great exchange where he says, nobody cared about those little girl, those girls. And Jughead says, oh, you are so wrong about that.
Yeah.
Which, awesome, particularly because we see everybody track them down. And then we get a huge fight montage. Tony finds Britta, seemingly gets attacked. We find out later she was not actually attacked, but she screams. Jughead and Dreyfus fight. Betty gets attacked as well. And Fags just straight up
steps in a bear trap.
Ugh. That would
bear
hurt
a trap.
Lot.
That definitely broke his leg, first of all, because that's what they do.
But second
of all, the fact that everybody's like, I'm tangling with a Mothman, and he's like, oops, oh no, yikes.
I did like his, like, you think your armor's going to hold up against a shotgun blast, and then, like, few moment as the person, like, walked away was nice.
How about the Betty flashback to the trash bag killer? I thought that was cool. And also setting up maybe the one of the only other mysteries we haven't really touched upon yet.
Yes, definitely. It'll be very interesting to see if TBK shows up in the last two episodes. I have a suspicion or a theory that they may hold him off for season six. I think we talked about this before. But
we did. And that is the five-part season opener is a full-on horror movie with the trash bag killer being at the heart of it.
Yeah, potentially. That's my theory right now. But also, I could see them just wrapping it up in the next two episodes and that being fine as well. But regardless, I agree. Very cool moment. Tony turns out it wasn't attacked. She was helped by one of the Stark Weathers, the one good Stark
that was
Weather.
Nice.
Which was nice. Jughead stops Dreyfus from chewing his own tongue off. And
what a finishing move they have, the Stark Weathers.
Hard to do. I can't even figure out how you do that.
I don't know. I mean, don't try too hard.
Okay. And then we get the foot stomp. The Betty foot stomp was unbelievable.
She says, your hunting days are over, you sick. And what do you think she was going to say at the end? Was the word she was specifically going to use after sick before she got cut off? Because I can't figure out what it is.
I thought it was son of a bee.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Do you think
so? Well, also
interesting. Bees. Cheryl controls bees. Now Tony is massaging Fang's foot. It looks like the foot is on the other leg, if you know what I mean.
Oh, boy.
Fangs is really nervous about balancing everything, but Tony isn't worried about if they're going to watch each other's backs. Very sweet, nice scene here.
Yeah.
Archie and Veronica are straight up in a bubble bath. Very comfortable.
Yeah. Where she was almost murdered, but then, you know.
Now, I got to give credit where it's due. Varchi fans, and I don't know where this came from, since the beginning of the season, they picked up on something. Where they're like, oh, this season, the plot of Archie and Veronica is the plot of The Notebook. And I read everything they posted. And I was like, what are you talking about? How does this track at all? And they're like, it's all going to end in them in a bubble bath. And they legit predicted this like 13 episodes ago somehow, which is insane.
That is crazy.
Kudos to them.
Shouts to the Archie heads out there.
Yeah, blew my mind a little bit. Hiram burns the picture of Hermione and Veronica. As we mentioned, Betty talks to Dreyfus. The FBI is coming to take away all these Starkweathers, but she just wants to know where Polly is. And he says, she's in the junkyard. I can draw you a map. And we end with a total gut punch of the scene that honestly brought tears to my eyes the way it was played, where Alice and Betty slow walk to the car. They open it up and we see everything from their perspective. They see what's in the trunk. They start sobbing. They hold each other. And that's how we end the episode, to the point that there's not even like the Riverdale sting over the logo. It's just silence. So sad.
So sad. And I was so surprised they went this way with it. I thought it was a good choice. It played really well. And it's kudos to them for like Dreyfus and the Mothman and all that, you know, are scary, but it's also a little goofy. The armor they're wearing and whatever. And out of that, they still were able to hit this just like huge emotional, like downbeat, like really, I just thought it was really well done.
Well, what I wanted to mention earlier on the podcast, and maybe this is taking a little too far, but what I took away from this moment with Polly is a lot of what they've been dealing with since the time jump is the idea that things aren't as easy in your 20s or as clear in your 20s as they are in high school, whether it's romantic relationship, whether it's jobs, whether it's mysteries or anything else you're dealing with. And the Polly thing, I spent the entire season, the longer they dragged it out, because I've watched TV before and I've read stories before, thinking, oh, you're dragging this out to make me think she's dead when she's going to turn up alive at the last second, because that's the way these stories work. Nope. And the fact that they kept it for Riverdale realistic and instead let her be dead the entire time, having died episodes back and being awfully in that trunk, it doubles down on that idea that, no, these are not the same mysteries that you solved in high school. Not that they were necessarily tied up with a bow before, but you're not going to have the best result. You're sometimes going to have the worst result. Sometimes you're not going to really solve the mystery. It's just going to be what it is. There was no mystery. The thing you thought happened did in fact happen. And I thought that was a remarkably subtle way of pointing to that.
Well, yeah, I think that's a great
summation.
There was
a mystery. They had to figure out it was Old Man Dreyfus.
Yes.
But, you know.
Yeah, but I'm saying side by side with that. I think that's a real gut punch that ties into a lot of the bigger themes of the season. So, while we have time, why don't we grab a couple of these comments and questions here about the episode.
I thought it was very interesting because we had these, like, two stories where we had Jughead and Betty, and then we had kind of the mind thing going. And I kept worrying that people were going to call Betty and Jughead about the mine and they would be kind of taken out of their case. So I'm glad. And there was even a time where they were like, oh, I got to get this phone call. And I was like, oh, because I really didn't want Betty and Jughead to be kind of pulled away for, you know, especially if they thought Archie was dead. Like my mind was spiraling like, oh, God, if Betty thinks Archie is dead and then like maybe she'll start, you know, freaking out or whatever. But I was just so happy that they kind of kept them separately. But the way they had the kind of episode kind of, you know, all over the place like that was very cool and very interesting.
Yeah, really, like we were saying earlier, really well done in terms of crossing everything over and keeping it consistent in terms of the plot, getting the idea that even if a character was not in a plot line, there were other things happening at the same time in town and they all know about it and are keeping in touch. So a couple of viewer comments and questions here. First one, this is from Phallus Sushi on Instagram. Why was this episode so perfect? Like even all Cheryl's craziness made sense and everything was just perfect. Well, except the fact that Alice is always crying. Yes, 100% agree with that. That is so sad. And I'm very nervous about next week's episode, which is just digging into Alice, apparently, and showing her musical fantasy world where she pictures the perfect Cooper family. So that's going
to
be.
Oh, man.
That's going to be rough.
This spoiler, dude. What the fuck?
Shameless. That's in the synopsis. It's the description. Yeah. Shameless 30S RVD on Twitter says, I wrote an entire thread about this because there's so much to say, but I'm convinced that we're going to have Veronica as our next villain. My bet she loses everything. Archie, her marriage, her innocence by end of season and snaps. What do you guys think about that?
That could be very interesting. Like, you know, because if Hiram, you know, tries to get some vengeance on her and does some things, that could be very interesting, because there has been this kind of like, she kind of clicks into these modes very easily that are very Hiram-like. So that could be very crazy and very, very interesting moving forward.
I don't think she'll be a full-on villain. It's not like it's going to be a one-for-one. She replaces the silly little clown Hiram next season or at the end of the season. But I do think the idea that she's going to lose Archie does make a lot of sense because they got back together.
How dare you?
Just right away. There was no big reunion. It was truly like she threw the divorce papers at Archie and then they had sex and then they're basically together. It feels like that feels fast unless it's meant to be something that you need to accomplish because you're going to then change it or move away from it somehow.
Dude, it's Riverdale. What do you mean seems fast? Go fuck yourself.
No, but everything is fast, but they also like the emotional moments they take their time with, I think. Like, I don't know, let's see if I can think of a couple. Like when Betty and Archie got together, I feel like that was a real emotional.
It was the origin of love.
Right, before we get too in the weeds on this, Casey Kendall, KK23
Casey,
on Instagram.
Casey Kasem.
On Instagram says, You can tell Fangs needs Kevin. They both need each other. Fangs needs to tell Kevin what he told Tony. What do you think? Is Kevin and Fangs over? Is that ever going to come back? No? It's going to come back, you think?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I'm starting to think, like, the Fangs-Tony relationship, and it's not obviously a sexual relationship, but it feels like that's sort of the home for those characters on the show based on this episode. And it does feel like, once again, Kevin is a little bit out on his own and doesn't have a spot.
But
I don't
know if he can find his way back home.
100%. And I'm not saying it won't happen. But right now, it just my gut, it feels like Kevin is not a part of that, and Kevin needs to find, a new home or a new path.
Well, he just, you know, went out of Cheryl's crazy church, so maybe, you know, he'll wander back in and, you know, seek some shelter.
This is from TR Zuniga on Instagram. Justin, I'm talking to you. Why does Vargy still active? Please, Cheryl, save us with your prayers. Ha 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 ha. This also ties into Walking Dead on Twitter says, is there any way for back to Vargy from here?
I mean, I just sort of said what my take is. Like, I think we get Vargy because I'm choked up because I'm so emotional about this. Because to get Vargy, you have to deal with Vargy. You have to go through Vargy to get Vargy. And we're in Vargy now, so that means we're one step closer to Vargy. Nope. And I think, as we saw in this episode, Bughead, while a great Alex's like love letter to Bughead as a working duo, great. But like a lot of coworkers, you're not having sex with them. So,
but
I think that's the way it's going to be.
And it could bloom into something.
True,
spending
but
a lot
time
of time together. What's more romantic than talk about murder cases? Come on.
Well, let me ask you this then. We've talked about this on the podcast before, but Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa did say that Betty and Archie's relationship is going to deepen by the end of the season. So how, given that we have two episodes left, do we go from Vargy is as together? Hold on. Vargy is as together as they've ever been to Betty and Archie's relationship deepen. If we were to take that in a romantic sense, how do you get one from one place to the other?
Because I think Betty's coming with Polly, finding Polly's body is sort of the end of her like dark journey that she and Archie talked about. So she's going to need Archie to come sort of pull her out of that, I think. And the depth of their relationship will be through that. Archie needs to save Betty to save Riverdale. And so I think he's going to do both of those things.
Hearsay, that's just wild.
Whether or not they get together at the end of the season, I feel like I've speculated about this before, but I think they're going to be in a position to be together if they're not. Or maybe we will get the full split of
You're giving Archie a lot of credit, bro.
That's me. That's the way I am.
A couple of other quick ones here before we wrap up. This is from Kaya Ellery, Sassy Shopper on Instagram. Just so glad show got back to how it used to be with a Bughead investigation.
Yeah.
It's all we've needed. And my husband said, wow, these scenes with Bughead make the show. I can watch it again and be excited.
Well, first off, husband, like, you know, get involved. But yeah, I mean, it, the magic of them just getting back together, and even Tabitha, who doesn't, you know, knows just the little bits and pieces of it, was, had the outside mind enough to be like, if we need things solved, we need the two masterminds to work together and again, and to
100%,
bring,
like, when I'm working on a home improvement project, I always get my hammer and my saw. And I use them, and they're great at solving the mystery of how I can fix this.
Yeah, but
door.
When you're not around, they get it all.
They're fucking?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. I never thought of it that way. Yeah. When I put my tools away, they're in there straight up humping each other.
That's right.
All right, I know we're going to have to wrap up soon, but I do want to touch on two more things real quick. This one, I'm going to just read the end of Deborah Barros on Twitter. It was a very long, nice question, but there's been a lot of speculation about this. Ask, can we have an AU alternate universe celebrating Chapter 100? Come on, Chapter 100 is always more special. If my count is correct, the 100th episode of Riverdale is going to be the 5th episode of this 5-episode event. There's been a lot of back and forth with speculation about whether season 6's event is going to be some sort of alternate universe, non-canon or otherwise. What do you think? We've talked about this a little bit before, but Pete, what's your take?
Well, what the fuck are you talking about? You just said like a bunch of different stuff, and we're like, Pete, what do you think? Like 100th episode of what and what
event? Of Riverdale? What are you talking about?
I know that part, but you're like, oh, the old 100 episode trick. Every time there's 100 episode, they do this thing, and I'm waiting for you to explain what that thing is.
Okay, so I was trying to keep this short and quick,
well,
but I'll.
I'm sorry that I don't follow your fucking shit, all right? Jesus Christ, don't ask me half a question.
So the new season starts with a 5-episode event, and the last episode of that event is going to be the 100th episode. So, of course, that it will be a special episode. But I guess the question is, how special and what sort of special are you hoping
for? Right.
Well, thank you, Justin. Thank you for speaking English.
The other part of it, though, is there was an interview that went up where it was called out that they've internally been calling these 5 episodes River Vale. And they are full on a horror.
Because a lot of skiing. There's a lot of skiing.
Yep, River like Vale, that Colorado. Vale. Yeah. No, yeah. I think the reference is Welcome to Night Vale, the podcast. So it's going to get even weirder and darker and more upsetting than usual. I personally don't think it's going to be an alternate universe, is my take. I think it's going to be the same universe. But I do think there's a lot of talk about maybe we're going to see Life with Archie or some sort of riff there. So there could be imaginary sequences. What? No, Life with Archie. Where you got to see him married to Betty and married to Veronica, and so what their life was like. So I think we could see some touches of that there potentially, but I still think they'll keep it in continuity, is my guess.
It seems to me like a veil when somebody dies. So maybe like if a main character like Hiram or something dies, that sends some characters kind of spinning off, and maybe one of those being Veronica, and maybe this alternate world is just like Veronica goes fucking, you know,
skiing.
She goes real dark, really kind of turns into her father for a little while. And, you know, and maybe that's the kind of veil of it all.
Maybe, I guess we'll see. Last one here real quick. Leonza on Twitter says, if Chick is the true hero of Riverdale, what is Nana Blossom? The true villain?
Ooh, interesting.
No, Chick is not worth mentioning. And Nana, I just love the way she spills the beans when she kind of lightly had her foot put over the fire there by Betty. And it's amazing how somebody who like lives in the walls and is barely shown knows all of the answers.
Betty yells at her once and she spills every bean she's got in her old body.
Yeah,
I think Nana Rose is the Statue of Liberty of Riverdale. She's just standing in the harbor holding a torch. And screaming, this
also,
town's fucked up.
Also, what's real fucked up is the way they kind of talked about Cousin Timothy. And, you know, they body shamed him. And that was not cool, man. That was really fucked up.
I couldn't agree with you more. That was my big takeaway from the episode as well, is they body shamed Cousin Timothy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Real quick, who was the MVP of this episode? Pete.
Come on. Betty got to fucking stomp on some heads. This was unbelievable, Betty Epp. It was nice to see Jughead and Betty back to being themselves a little bit, kicking ass, taking names. It was glorious. Let's just keep the fun train moving, and then, you know, this will turn into a little romance, and then the show's back right where it needs to be.
Low-key, this was a Dr. Curdle episode, but high-key, this is a Veronica episode all day, air day. Like, she crushed every scene she was in. She truly had season, like, ending monologues, multiple season-ending monologues in here, so, like, definitely Veronica episode.
Yeah, I'm 100% on the same page as you, Justin, there. I was going to call out Dr. Curdle, but Veronica killed it. Just to shout out somebody else, I think Cheryl just had some crazy scenes, but the work that Madeline Betch did in those cave scenes when she was praying, man, there was just like an insane intensity there. It was really impressive.
The shot of all these people kind of like working and then Cheryl just sitting there on her pillow.
And I just want to give one last shout out again to Natalie Bolt for being in the episode as Penelope Blossom, but also directing the hell out of this episode. And I believe this was the first episode of television she's directed that she killed it. This is a great episode of Riverdale. So that's awesome. If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Riverdale, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Riverdale Dark on Twitter, Riverdale F on Instagram, Riverdale After Dark on Facebook, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you after dark.
And for Little Bitch, Bughead Bitch, and Bargy Bitch, we are signing off tonight.
Look at me. Look at me. You